Hello and welcome to the Miracle Moon podcast with me, Dr. Frankie Harrison, a clinical psychologist and Georgie Miracle Moon co-founder. As two NICU mums, we want you to know that you are not alone.
We'll be talking to professionals in the field, parents on their journeys after NICU, and exploring and validating common thoughts and feelings that NICU parents so often experience, but no one talks about.
So whether you're listening to this in NICU now, or if NICU has been a part of your past, just know that what you feel is valid, what you experienced is hard, and that there is a whole community of NICU parents here to support you. Come and join us. Hello and welcome to the Miracle Moon podcast. Today we are talking to Amanda Griffith Atkins. She is a marriage and family therapist, and her website describes her as a mum of a disabled child and an advocate of parents, which I love. So Amanda provides a wonderful space on Instagram for parents of children with disabilities, and we are very much looking forward to talking to you today and talking all things about parenting a child with disabilities after NICU. So thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
It's lovely. Thank you. So shall we just get stuck right in? So can you tell us a little bit about you, who you are, and your kind of journey to becoming even like a family therapist, but also to becoming a parent?
Yes. So I have he's almost 14, which is crazy to say that. He'll be turning 14 next week, actually. So wow. Almost 14-year-old son named Asher, and he has Prader-Willi syndrome, mm-hmm. which is a rare genetic syndrome, and it occurs in about 1 in 20,000 births. So our road to parenting started when we were pretty young. My husband and I were 26 years old. It was right after grad school. And I live in Chicago in the United States, and got pregnant sort of unexpectedly at the age of 26, right after grad school, was working for just a few months when I found out that I was pregnant. And so just like most parents, I thought, okay, I'm researching daycares. I'm planning on my transition for maternity leave, and then I'll go back to work afterwards. Parenthood happened much sooner than I thought it would, but we were sort of going into it thinking, we're going to make this work. We'll find daycare. Everything will be okay. Mm. Of course, when Asher was born, we did not know that there was going to be any major problems. My pregnancy had a few odd things, but nothing really pointed to anything specific. And so when it was all said and done, I ended up quitting work for about 3 years to stay home with him full time, which was totally not in the plan. As I mentioned, I had just finished school, had tons of student loans, and was really eager to start working. And so really there was a point shortly after his diagnosis where I just felt like my world had totally turned upside down, and just thought, you know, this isn't what I signed up for in motherhood. This isn't the plan that I had for myself, which, you know, so many, whether it's NICU parents or disability parents, it's laughable to think of like our plan, right?
Because
most of us in this position, none of us really planned for this. So, it's obvious that I ended up going back to work, obviously, and now I feel really secure in my career. But for a while there, I think that was one of the hardest parts, was just the uncertainty in all of it. And he did spend a month in the NICU that was just such a roller coaster. And, you know, one day it seems like, oh, things are really looking good today. Maybe we'll get to discharge him soon. And then the next day, nope, he had a really bad night. That's totally off the table now. So it is just such a roller coaster. And, you know, reflecting on how young I was at the time too, it's just... Mm-hmm. Whew, I'm glad those days are over, but also I have so much empathy and compassion for the parents that are still in it right now.
Yeah. And I think it's that bit of it being a roller coaster. People talk about that a lot, don't they? That roller coaster kind of feeling. And it feels like that kind of one step forward, two steps back type thing a lot, doesn't it? And it's that uncertainty of like even just walking onto the unit and not really knowing what you're going to come onto, what you're going to expect, what the day is going to look like, which is really hard.
Absolutely, especially when you're seeing on social media or when you get together with your friends, you're seeing this sort of window into parenthood of maybe what we thought it was going to be like. You know, they're taking their baby to lay in the grass or sitting in the chair nursing, reading a book to their baby. Like these are they're such simple, predictable things as parents that we expected that we would be experiencing, but our reality is sterile. And, you know, you're washing your hands, maybe you're putting gloves on, you're walking into a room filled with beeping, and it's just those stark differences, just, it couldn't be more different to what our experience is and what we're seeing, maybe friends or peers, what they're going through.
Yeah. So the kind of expectations of what you thought it was going to be like completely kind of shattered. And with that comes that grief, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, this is not what I expected. And I'm guessing that's kind of layers of feelings that you had around that, especially like the idea of not being able to return back to work and things like that, in terms of like anger, sadness, like so many different emotions within that.
All of it. And yeah, I think I know that NICU parents experience that just simply in their experience. Yeah. And I think disability parents, it's sort of one step further, because you're walking away from the NICU oftentimes with this diagnosis. And like you and I, we were speaking briefly before we started recording, you know, just the ambiguity in that, and how even with a diagnosis, there's still no guarantees. Like, many of these syndromes or diagnoses have a spectrum, right? It could be your child is relatively high functioning, they can participate in school, they can speak, they can walk, or there's other ends of spectrum where the child really can't function independently, requires a lot of support. And so even when you first get that diagnosis, there's that uncertainty of like, what is this? What is our life going to look like 5 years from now? I really have no idea. And I think for parents, that's terrifying.
Absolutely. So how does that uncertainty impact you, either you or the kind of parents that you support?
Mm-hmm. I think it's experienced as anxiety often, and there's so many ways that manifests itself. I think for a lot of us, I know I can speak for myself, certainly, there's this desire to control anything that I can't control, especially when it comes to parenting, especially when it comes to my son. Not his behavior, but more so his surroundings and his safety. We actually just found out that he got into a sleepaway summer camp for kids with disabilities.
Oh, wow.
With a one-on-one aide. And he's never done anything like that. I don't even know that he's ever went to summer camp, like even just one where we've dropped him off, you know? So this feels like a huge step and we've been on this wait list for 2 years for the camp. And when I got the email, I felt so excited. But then a couple of days after, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to drop him off someplace for a week and then drop him away and trust that he's going to be safe with them. Like,
that's a lot.
Yeah, it feels so, I still even can't totally wrap my mind. I was thinking maybe I'll like rent a hotel room, a mile away and just be close in case they need me. But then reminding myself, no, this is why we're doing it, so that we can have some respite, so that as a family, we can have experienced time, like in a little bit more, you know, eat dinner at a later hour, stay up late, like live a little, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, that idea of control, I mean, it's just everywhere for us, where we want to make sure that our kid is safe. We want to make sure that we know what's coming. So we read into little things and try and draw meaning. You know, I think that's sort of the essence of anxiety, is that we're trying to predict the future with what we have right now, which sometimes means connecting the dots where maybe there really are no dots. That need for control, man, it's pretty strong.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we kind of like it, it's a deep, deep level, isn't it? That kind of need for control. And I think the thing like about NICU is uncertainty, lack of control. They're the things that it kind of completely throws at you, doesn't it? So it feels completely out of your hands. But then equally, I think it does a good job, and I don't know whether this is your experience, of doing things like implementing the routine, the timings, the monitoring, the like the mills of milk and all that kind of stuff, which kind of gives you a false sense of control.
Yes.
In that environment as well. So I think that can then last for parents as well afterwards, of that being your kind of introduction to parenthood, and it being like this kind of monitoring and numbers and you know, that kind of control. So to then let that go and kind of trust your instinct, I think is really hard.
Oh, that's so hard. But so yeah, with Asher, he was tube fed. And so like you were saying, yeah, we're monitoring every single milliliter that he's consuming. And it's really comes down to an equation. You know, he didn't cry when he was hungry. It was all a scientific, you know, mathematical equation that came up with how many milliliters we're supposed to give him and how often. Fast forward 3 years later, we had a second son who came on his due date, VBAC. I mean, I could not believe how quote unquote picture perfect it was. I had never been more anxious in my life than when I was responsible for breastfeeding a newborn baby. I'm like, I have no idea how many milliliters this child, like, how can we possibly function with just letting it, you know, just, oh, let's just see, he'll cry when he's hungry. Like what, you know? And so those two experiences, I could not wrap my mind around this quote unquote normal experience because I was so used to tightly controlling everything the first time around that it felt just careless, you know?
yeah, totally. So how did you adjust to that? Like,
well, in my very anxious mind, I did something that nobody should, I don't recommend this to your listeners. I went and bought a scale and I weighed him before I fed him. And then I weighed him after I fed him. And you can then figure out the math that he ate, you know?
Yeah.
4 ounces is a terrible, terrible habit that I got into. But once I could trust that, okay, he's getting 6 ounces each feeding, he's fine. Once I learned to trust his nature a little bit, then I slowly could surrender it. But it definitely took some time. I really had to convince myself that everything was going to be okay. You know,
yeah,
it was hard.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it is so much about that trust, and you can't just switch that on, can you? It's about learning to trust your child, and it's about learning to trust yourself. And that has come with time and with doing things that enable that trust, I guess.
Yes. Yes. And remembering too, like trying to have some grace on ourselves, because when your child's in the NICU, there is no trust. Like it is so tightly controlled. With all the monitors, I mean, if their heart rate slows down, right, there's a monitor that's instantly letting you know. And like you were saying, that level of control and information, it does bring us comfort because we know what's going on. So I think it's important to acknowledge that, like, while that experience is really stressful and anxiety provoking, there's also a piece of it that feels really reassuring. And so I'm never one to look for a silver lining. That's like not my MO at all, but it is like, that's why your baby's in the NICU, so that you know that they're safe, so that you know that they're being monitored closely, you know that the nurses are watching them 24/7. And when that's taken away, yeah, it is an adjustment period, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I know Georgie, that was something that she spoke about, has spoken about quite a lot, is that adjustment to going home and that being really tricky. And I know that other people in, you know, in the community talk about that too. It's really hard.
Yeah, I actually got I have OCD, and I actually got super comfortable with the routines and the constant checking in NICU, and found that period when you get home a lot harder than the actual NICU, the 6 weeks in NICU, which is at odds with a lot of people, but some people can relate to that. So
Georgie, I'm wondering too, if you don't mind if I ask you a question.
No, sure.
Did you notice that your OCD kind of got heightened when you got home, or how did you handle that adjustment? Because that must have been incredibly difficult.
Yeah, totally. I was actually relatively fine on the unit until it was literally the day, or the few days leading up to going home, when we were basically waiting for her to hit a specific weight to go home. Mm-hmm. And then my brain went into absolute overdrive and I couldn't sleep. I was sat watching her breathe. I couldn't leave the room. I constantly had to check her to basically replace those checks that were happening in the NICU. So even in NICU, I wouldn't let them take the apnea monitor off her. And because I just physically couldn't do it, because I was like, well, I've got a mat at home that she's going to lay on all the time. So don't take that away, because that's not what it's going to be like at home. And yeah, I having had OCD for a number of years prior to this, I just was lucky enough, or have worked in therapy previously, to have the self-awareness after a few weeks to say, you know what, I'm in a really bad way. And I went and got some help pretty quickly. So she was born in September. Her due date was November. And probably by the December, I was on a more even keel again. I went back on some medication and had a sort of top-up therapy to alongside going back on the medication to work through it a bit. But yeah, it basically was just the fact that I had been there before. But I can imagine if someone hasn't been in that kind of mental state before, it's going to take a long time to realize that actually this is not normal how I'm feeling, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was wondering, because I think, right, there's two different situations. One is if you're aware of emotional, mental struggles prior to pregnancy. Like I have had anxiety my whole life. And so of course my anxiety would be really amped up by NICU and diagnosis and everything. But yeah, there's a whole other population that maybe this is their first time ever dealing with these issues. And so, yeah, how do they know when it's time to seek help? Especially because like we think of like the NICU or getting a diagnosis and we're like, yeah, that's, it's normal to feel anxious. It's normal to feel quote unquote OCD from those situations. Right. But like, I think it's important for people to understand, like, if it gets intolerable, that's not normal. And at that point, it's important to go seek help before you feel like you're completely falling apart. So I'm glad that you mentioned totally.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are, well, I'm a new mom. Of course, I'm going to be anxious. But it's just recognizing, isn't it, what that threshold of normality is?
Yes.
Well, I guess it's normality, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's also, I guess, thinking about whether it is stopping you from living your life in the way that you want to.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it's intrusive thoughts, it's whether it's like that you're feeling that you need to avoid stuff, that kind of fear, like what it is. And I know, again, thinking about like your life is different. So, again, adjusting to what that is going to look like. But if it's, you know, I'm thinking about things like the health anxiety, for example, and that being such a huge thing in our community. And I don't know whether you kind of find that as well, but the kind of fear of, you know, germs and stuff. And a lot of that is warranted when it really impacts your child. But then sometimes it kind of tips over the edge, doesn't it, of that kind of, I need to avoid everything. And it's such a hard balance to kind of figure that out.
Yes, I think that is so important. And I would like more conversation and just general societal like discussion around when do we know, you know, when it's like dipping into a pathological point? Like, when do we know? Right. Because I think it, like you're both saying, it's really hard for parents to like, yeah, it's normal to, especially, you know, with COVID and everything now, it's like, yeah, you don't want to bring your, you know, your 8-week-old baby who's been in the NICU for a month. Yeah, it's probably not the best idea to bring them to a giant indoor sporting event or something, you know, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, that's common sense. But what if it's an outdoor party with just 10 people, you know, right? It's like, okay, so when do we know part of it is listening to your gut as a parent and trusting yourself, but also you have to sort of fact check that a little bit and, you know, maybe asking your physician or talking to your girlfriends and asking them what they think and how they treat their situation. But yeah, I think that's really something continuing talking about.
Yeah.
That's another thing that I definitely did as well, was asking Margot's neonatologist when COVID first came about. Actually, we were due to go on a holiday as an example. And I just rang him and I said, what would you do? Am I taking too much risk out of her life? Like, what level of risk is acceptable? And that was really helpful as well, like to set a baseline from a medical standpoint. But then that was me checking again. So
yeah, but it is okay to do that kind of checking, isn't it? It's if you were then going to 5 different doctors and asking them all the same question, right? So that kind of reassurance feels okay to be able to kind of fact check for yourself in that way. I think the thing about kind of gut instinct, I really struggled with that. So yeah. I remember people telling me, follow your gut, and me going, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And especially because it was my first child in the NICU. I was like, I don't know. I'm not too sure. Like, so then I did a lot of kind of reassurance seeking and a lot of kind of like asking in like Facebook groups and like other parents and, you know, preemie support type stuff. To kind of go, is this normal? What? How are you doing it? You know, messaging Georgie and stuff like that when we got to know each other of how am I supposed to be dressing my child at nighttime? How am I supposed to be, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
And it's all anxiety, isn't it? Just getting in the way of that gut instinct.
Mm. Yes. And I think that really highlights the importance of community, right? Like, especially in these sort of like smaller populations like ours, where it's either like NICU or you have a baby with a diagnosis, like finding people who have experienced similar situations and can be a sounding board for you and can, especially if you have people maybe further down the line, you know, like connecting with somebody whose baby was in the NICU a couple years ago, and maybe they're through the thick of it, or somebody whose child has the same diagnosis as yours, but maybe they're a little bit further ahead, like trying to have people in your corner who get it, who you can be like, hey, am I sounding crazy to you today? Or does this seem like something I should be paying attention to? Right. Like, that has gotten me through. And it sounds like for both of you too, I think that's just so important.
Yeah.
Yeah. We totally do that all the time. Yeah. We're like, what would you do? Here's a picture of my child's bum. Is this okay?
No, literally that's happened.
No, literally that's happened. Yeah. That's a literal story.
I believe it.
We are so thankful to Emma at Cover My Bubble for sponsoring our podcast. She asked us not to do an advert, but we so believe in what her company is doing that we really wanted to shout about it. Cover My Bubble is a family-run insurance company. Emma started the company after her daughter Lily spent time in NICU, but sadly didn't make it home. Emma was impacted financially by the situation and wanted to support other people so that they don't have to go through the same thing.
Having both been through NICU and not having insurance, we saw the impact the NICU and illness can have on your family emotionally and financially. You can hear more all about the different types of insurance that Cover My Bubble offer on our episode with Emma, but also on their website, covermybubble.co.uk. We believe strongly in this company. They come from the heart and they are working to support families like ours. We know that so many of you will have been impacted emotionally by these issues, but by thinking about insurance, maybe some of the financial pressure could also be alleviated.
But I think that that is, you know, and one of the things that we talk about a lot is that kind of validation and kind of normalization of just talking about some of the really maybe darker thoughts that you might be having, darker feelings, things that feel a little bit more uncomfortable post NICU. And I know that that's something that you speak about as well, and just kind of really naming some of those things in your community as well. And I think there's so much power in doing that, and just saying the things that people feel are like taboo, or they don't feel like they're comfortable in saying.
Yes, because I think we have this misconception that parenthood should be, you know, 100% delightful. And, you know, we especially if our child was in the NICU, we should feel so much gratitude that they're out and we can go live our life and everything's fine. And, you know, there is just so much residual, there's such a residual impact from those experiences, like really trauma that we've experienced. And, you know, trauma is such a buzzword nowadays. And so I don't like to overuse it, but I don't know of anyone who's left the NICU without some sense of trauma that they've experienced. And so, yeah, that's pretty much my whole platform, right? Is like naming the fact that, especially parents of kids with disabilities, that there are parts of it that are really, really hard and that some days feel unbearable. And that doesn't make you a bad parent. It doesn't mean that you don't love your child. It just means that you're in a dark place right now. And keeping it in just kind of like makes it grow. And then we start to feel shame around it. And then we feel like we're not allowed to feel this way. And so I love just I have a friend that I'll text some days like, this is a really, I really hate being a disability parent today. She'll say, yep, I know. I had a day like that last week. I hear you, you know? And it's like,
yeah,
it just feels good to say it sometimes. Absolutely. And to say it with somebody who's not going to judge you. And yeah. Once you say it, a lot of times it's like, okay, all right, I needed to say that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, completely. It's just cathartic getting it out in itself, isn't it? And having someone else who hears you and doesn't judge you and just goes, yeah. Like, you don't need anything else really, do you? You just need someone to go, yeah, that's really hard.
Yeah.
So thinking about like maybe some of the more tricky like feelings that come up, jealousy, resentment.
Yeah.
You know, stuff that I've seen you speaking about, it's stuff that we've kind of spoken about a lot as well. How do you feel like that kind of comes out in like the families that you support in your kind of community?
I think jealousy is huge because it feels so gross. It feels like we not feel this way. We feel a lot of self-judgment and shame. What I've noticed from people I've worked with, even in my own life, is like oftentimes they'll be like perhaps your baby is the same age as like your sibling's baby or your cousin's baby or your best friend's baby, something like that. And, you know, their experience seems or feels picture perfect to you, and you're comparing yours thinking like, wow, my experience looks nothing like this. And so there is that feeling of jealousy, which very quickly can turn into resentment and avoidance, right? Like it feels like you want to avoid that person, or it feels too hard to be around them. You know, going to birthday parties might feel really triggering. Milestones, anything like that can be just like feel like too much. And again, I would just encourage people to own it to themselves, maybe to a therapist or to a close friend, and try and remember that it's not anyone's fault. Like it's not your sister's fault that she had a healthy baby, quote unquote, and you didn't, right? Like also, it just might be hard for you to be around them for a little bit, and that's okay. I wouldn't, in that situation, if the relationship's close enough, I would encourage someone to go to their sister and say like, look, I love you. I love your baby. I am so, so happy that everything's okay for you, but I just need a little time because it feels like too much when I'm around your baby. It has nothing to do with you or your baby or how much I love you. It's just right now, it's too much for me emotionally. Like say it. And then your sister has the opportunity to be like, oh my gosh, like I didn't know if you were feeling that way. And take all the time you need and let's talk about how we can manage this moving forward, you know? So don't feel like you have to carry that burden on your own. I would encourage people to have these loving conversations, because if we don't tell them how we're feeling, how are they going to know?
Yeah, completely. And it's that bit of then allowing people to understand, and hopefully you're met with that person who is kind of validating and not, you know, angry or whatever. But I guess it's just that bit of staying true to yourself and allowing yourself to put in those boundaries, which is being kind of kind and compassionate to yourself and your space and where you're at that point. And it doesn't mean you're always going to be there.
Right. And you had a good point. Like the person may not be able to have the capacity. They may not, they may feel offended by that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's okay. Yeah. That's also okay.
Yeah, exactly. You are still allowed to put those boundaries in place.
Yes.
Like of what you need at that time.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, the way that I often think about it with that kind of jealousy is kind of framing it in a grief way of it going like it's showing you what it is that you so wanted that you don't have. And that is a grief. So, you know, and I think that sometimes that can feel a bit easier to digest than labeling it as that kind of jealousy, because that's got kind of negative connotations maybe, or like you know, it's kind of a bad emotion in a way.
I love the way you said that. I think maybe owning it, like I'm really struggling with my grief around this, like that does feel more digestible. You're right.
But then, and I guess there's so many parts of the kind of grief, and I know that we talk about it again a lot in terms of NICU. So that experience of being in NICU, you know, even things like having your baby prematurely and the grief of like, you know, even like a full trimester and things like, you know, having a baby shower or the bump pictures and all that kind of stuff that kind of gets missed when you have your baby prematurely. But then everything that kind of comes after that. And that then feeling really hard. And I guess what you spoke to earlier of going like, I didn't sign up for this. This isn't what was in the plan.
Yeah.
And then that feeling really hard, especially when you're used to being in control.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It kind of changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So how did you manage that? How did you manage the fact that it was so different for you, and the kind of uncertainty of what this was going to look like for you, given that, you know, maybe this isn't shown in other places, people, you know, weren't maybe talking about it, you didn't know what to expect. How did you manage that?
I think looking back, I almost like I wish that I had to have a different answer, but the way that I managed it, and this is not what I would like want. This is like, if I could go back and speak to my younger self, I would tell her to do things differently. But I think I tried to pretend like everything was okay. I really tried to pretend like we can go on family vacations. We can go to all the events. We can like keep up with things. We can do this. We can do that. And I've said this before, but I feel like I didn't really allow us to slow down to like make space for how really difficult this was. Like Asher had an NG feeding tube for 5 months, and then he had a G tube put in. He was in therapies like 3 days a week. We had usually had at least one specialist appointment a week as well. My husband was working out of town Monday through Thursday. He would travel out of town Monday through Thursday, like stay in a hotel and be away. And so I was like solo parenting this brand new baby. Wow. With all this medical stuff. And in hindsight, I wish I just would have been like, hey, on the weekends, like just stay in, like you don't have to go out and be social and try and pretend like you're a normal 26-year-old, you know, you get to like slow your life down and be in like grief mode a little bit and like heal. I really wish I would have given myself permission to slow down. And like, I think part of it is because I was so young, I really felt this tension of like, I'm losing the life that I had or the life that I thought I was going to have with a baby. And so I need to make sure I do whatever it takes to keep my friends. And when like my friends were all and still are wonderful, and nobody would have ever been angry at me if I didn't do stuff, but I just felt the need to keep going and running on all cylinders when really I was just so devastated and lost inside. And so I think now this many years later, I'm almost 40 now, you know, now I feel like secure and I could be like, hell no, we're not doing that. Or no, I'm not going to that thing. No, that's crazy. Like I'm staying in, we're not bringing that his feeding tube, you know? So I just want to encourage maybe younger listeners or new parents that like, if your situation is impacting you, that is okay. It probably should be impacting you, you know, like allow yourself to slow down, because I really wish that I would have. And I don't think that I dealt with that. That was not healthy, I don't think, for my mindset and what I needed emotionally. I would have much more benefited from slowing down and like facing my feelings and like just giving myself some time.
Yeah. But I guess that's scary too, right? Slowing down, feeling your feelings and actually accepting like this is real.
Yes.
That's scary. So I get the bit of kind of going and just, you know, keeping doing, keeping moving, autopilot almost, because that's protective in a way.
Yes, you're so right. There was definitely, I mean, that whole experience is just so embedded in denial, right? Like I think it was just like, look, I can be normal. Look, I can still do everything. I can be this mom. I can be this version of myself, you know? And you're right. I think it was so hard for me to acknowledge that, oh, maybe I can't do this anymore. Right.
Yeah, completely. Completely. And I think that's that bit again, I just keep saying the word adjustment, but it's that adjusting. And you didn't know how to do this. You didn't know how to parent full stop to start with, being like a first time mum, but then having to parent a child with a disability and with, you know, like feeding tubes and everything else that you had to do. That must have been so much. And especially at 26 as well, to kind of get your head around like so much.
I'm thinking of like, maybe if you have listeners that are like, friends of people of you know, have friends with kids that are in the NICU or friend, you know, like that kind of thing. Like I think a way that friends can friends can support us is by being like, hey, like, let me come over to your house and I'll bring us some coffee and we can just sit and chat. Like,
yeah,
instead of being like, hey, let's go meet at the park and bring our babies. Let me come over and let's like put on a movie and we can just sit and sit by each other. And, you know, so like, I think if people can help us, it can meet us in a little bit of a slower pace and almost like give us permission. Like, I feel like we need that from our people. We need permission that it's like, I'm not going to forget about you if you don't come hang out with me. You know, yeah. I think that is something really practical that people can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that is something that me and Georgie have spoken about a lot as well, is that kind of friends kind of moving on with their lives in that way when you've gone through something that is so difficult and that being really difficult.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's feeling like you're behind or that you're losing something, right?
Mm, yeah.
And just how much you change as well.
Yeah. I think you change. And I think then, especially like I've had friendships with people who weren't parents yet, and then going through an experience like NICU and becoming a parent and being kind of thrown into parenthood through kind of trauma, and that then being very difficult because I'm like, I have been changed from the inside out. And like, how do we then do this as a friendship, and that being really hard?
I mean, my whole group of oldest friends were nowhere near having children when we had Margot. And I've just now got one of them is pregnant, and she is 28 weeks. Or when I last saw her, she was 28 weeks. And she was like, oh, wow. So Margot was born in like 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah. And she was like, I'm so sorry. I just didn't realize, like, I just didn't realize. And I just said, I know, it's fine. I know you didn't.
Yeah. But I love I had that a very similar experience with a friend that years later was like, whoa, I kind of get it a little bit now. And that felt so healing to me to be like, oh my gosh, thank you. Like, that means so much to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just like, it's like, I know it's fine. It's honestly fine. But like, the fact that you said that now is lovely.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So, I mean, I feel like there are so many different things that we could talk to you about, but if we kind of are wrapping it up and we're thinking about what advice you would give to other parents who are kind of coming out of NICU maybe, or kind of in the kind of early stages, have been given a diagnosis, what kind of advice would you give?
Okay, I think there's so much advice that could be given, and there's so much wisdom I feel like I've taken away from meeting other people and, you know, just even things like being on a podcast like this and just my own experience. But I think my biggest advice is almost more of an encouragement that, like, you will find your normal again. You know, those early days just feel so dark and feel like your life is forever changed in a way that you're never going to bounce back from. I mean, I remember, like I said earlier, feeling like I will never go back to work. I will never have a job. We will never have other children. You know, our life is forever changed. And it was forever changed. But like, here I am 14 years later. And, you know, I feel like life feels stable now. Like, life feels okay. There's hard days, but overall, like, we're functioning. We're okay. We're like a happy family. And so that doesn't mean that everything's going to be perfect, but I want new parents to like feel a sense of hope that like they just got to get through this and they will find their normal again and they will adapt to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think that's so important. And it's that part of just finding what your normal is, I guess, within that, right? Rather than everybody else's normal or what your expected normal was.
Exactly.
I totally say to friends now who are pregnant, it's like, regardless of whether they end up with NICU or a diagnosis or whatever, those newborn days, like, you feel like your life is over with that. But you're like, this is my life now. It's not that. But yeah, you totally do feel like that. You just feel like the curtain come down.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing now is that there are so many resources, like this podcast, like, you know, books, that like, I feel like things are talked about so much more now, even than they were when Asher was a baby, you know, 13, 14 years ago. Like there's so many resources now to be talking about these things and to build a community, even if it's online, like that totally counts too. But there are resources and there's help out there to like get you through these hard days too. And I think that's incredibly encouraging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us where people can find you to find your community.
So I'm on Instagram and it's Amanda period Griffith period Atkins. And that's really the best way to find me. I also have a website and it's AmandaGriffithAtkins.com. And that website has a therapist directory on it for parents of kids with disabilities. And you guys are on there. And I have connected with, I try to have a therapist from every one of the states. And then also there's a number from the UK and some from Latin America and Canada as well. So I have this dream of having, you know, like a global directory of therapists who are comfortable working with parents of kids with disabilities. It's not, they don't work with the kids, they work with the parents. And so people can check there. And also I've set up to this point, although my bandwidth is slowly decreasing for this, but if somebody DMs me that they're looking for a therapist and sends me their location, I'm happy to help them find someone, because I think that that's like definitely a life mission of mine, is like making therapy accessible for parents of kids with disabilities. And I would add parents of kids in the NICU, because there's such an overlap there with trauma and the experience. So, so come find me on the internet.
That's lovely. You know, I say the same to people about if I can't do the supporting you bit, I will try and help you find someone who can do that, whether that is, you know, a different kind of means in the UK, whether that's through kind of NHS routes or insurance routes, or whether it is through the private routes, or in the States, which I have less knowledge of. So that's wonderful to know that you've got that as a resource there. So thank you for doing that.
Yes.
Lovely. Well, thank you so, so much for your time. And thank you for the space that you have created and speaking so honestly and openly about your experience and about other people's experience. It's invaluable. So thank you.
Thank you. It was so good to talk to you. And I feel like we could have talked for hours. So this is
absolutely. Yeah, it's so great to meet you.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode. We'd be so grateful if you could rate, comment, or subscribe if you found it helpful. We'd love to see you again, so come and join our community on Instagram at Miracle Moon UK.
You can check out our other resources and services on our website, www.miraclemoon.co.uk. We can't wait to see you there.